Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
Hi, everyone. I'm DJ.
The Jumbo Commander himself has joined us in the house to talk about all things Strixhaven. DJ's been around quite a bit for Strixhaven, and we're very glad to have another professor like you in the house.
There are a lot of cards around. I don't know if you noticed this, but a lot of cards. We're slowly moving through our coverage of Strixhaven, and today we're talking about Commander 2021 cards.
Yep, and specifically how those cards might fit into your 99. So this isn't Strixhaven the main set. These are the cards that come out of the pre-cons, and we're going to be covering the white, blue, and black cards today. So these come from all of the decks. They're not specifically from any of them. We've been doing so much stuff. We've been talking about so many cards. There are going to be so many synergies. You might be interested in making these synergies come true for yourself. Well, in that case, head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, you buffoon. Get over there and buy some cards using that affiliate link. Or what, you know what? Get some sleeves while you're at it too. That's why I use, when you use that affiliate link, of course, you are supporting the show directly. And any, you know, if you made an order back in April, we did this awesome collaboration with Magic Kids, which gets Magic cards to schools around the nation and helps them with after-school programs and all that good stuff.
That's really awesome. Magic, like, was a place for me to, like, explore myself and, like, and really, like, when I was a kid, like, I was playing Magic on the playgrounds and making friends with Magic, so
yeah, it's great. That's when I fell in love with Red, because I saw Lightning Bolt, and I was like, this is so cool. Of course, the show is also brought to you by Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro provides all the awesome playmats and stuff you see on game nights. They also make stuff for each set, so if you like the Strixhaven art, if you like the Mystical Archive art that was in this set, wow, you can get some of those playmats right now from Ultra Pro. They also help us provide the stuff for game nights that we give away to our lucky viewers every single week. And finally, last week, the support of the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. We shout out one lucky patron every single week. So this episode is dedicated to Daniel Woodling. Sounds like a creature type.
You
rock, Daniel.
You'd be a great creature type, Daniel.
Now, I did see that there's a note here. It says that Daniel is actually someone that's done some great freelance graphic work and a few Game Nights card animations for us. So he did the end pages for Prismari and Witherbloom. So that's really cool. Daniel, a patron and someone that's helped us on the show as well.
Talented. Nice.
With a nice lucky call out. Okay, let's move right into it. We are covering only the Commander product today. The cards from the main set, they're going to have their own review videos released separately. Depending on when you're watching this, they may already be out. So make sure you subscribe to the channel and see where they are.
Yeah, a lot of times when we see these cards part of a pre-constructed deck, we think of them in terms of the Commander that's right there in the front. You know what I mean? And so now we're able to take it out of its normal context and evaluate and find out what decks they might go in right now in your Commander collection.
Yep. So, and if you're like me, I always buy one of each of the pre-cons. I play them a little bit. I love seeing how they play against each other. And then I just tear that sucker apart.
Totally.
I slot stuff in. That's one of my favorite things to do, especially when the pre-cons come out. So we are going to start with white. And we are going to talk about one big artifact creature angel called Angel of the Ruins. This is 5WW for a 5/7 artifact creature angel with flying. And when Angel of the Ruins enters the battlefield, exile up to 2 target artifacts and or enchantments. This also has plane cycling for 2 on it, which means you can pay 2 generic mana to discard this card, search your library for a planes card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. Okay, this is a 7-mana artifact creature, Angel. The first thing I wrote on this outline is do not underestimate plane cycling.
You should not. It's very good.
Yeah, any of the mountain cycling, swamp cycling, because you're not just getting a basic plains. You're paying 2 mana, fixing your mana because you can get Rogrin Triome. You can also cycle that away. Prairie Stream, Sacred Foundry, tons of lands. This helps you fix your mana and multicolored decks. And more importantly, it's not a dead card if you draw it in your opening hand.
Yeah, for sure. It can sometimes let you skimp, go a little bit lighter on your mana base too. Don't go too light.
Yeah,
but the cards like this really do help you smooth out your draw a little bit.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this as just sort of like a big dumb angel? Does it have enough utility to be a utility creature?
As a 7-mana 5/7 with flying, the stats aren't amazing. 7 mana is a lot. Keep in mind that these days you really only kind of run 1 or 2 cards past the 7-mana slot. So you got to be a little picky with that.
Oh man, I'm guilty of running way too many cards past the 7-mana slot.
That's definitely my, you know what, DJ, we're on the same page. Josh and I always talk about
this, like, only costs 2 mana, Jimmy. Come on. Nah.
That's true. I actually think this is a very powerful effect. You're exiling artifacts and enchantments, which is a lot better than destroying them. But 7 mana is a bit expensive.
Exiling 2 things, that's usually worth about 4 CMC, right? Like a crushed contraband kind of thing.
Return to dust.
Return to dust. And so that means you're getting like a 5/7 angel attached to it for not that much. That seems pretty good.
On top, right? 4 mana. And so that means it costs you 3 mana to get this angel.
That math doesn't always work out.
No, it doesn't.
Fans. It really doesn't.
But I would want to flicker this. I think this is where you're going to have a lot of fun, especially because you can reuse this in a rune deck, or maybe you're going to cheat it out of your graveyard by reanimating it. Mm-hmm. There's also cards like Angel of Sanctions, which has Embalm on it. So these are kinds of cards you want to put into your graveyard already. So I could see Angel of Ruins, right? Early turns, plane cycle it away, later on, regrow it out of your graveyard onto the battlefield. Not regrow, but
totally, I could see that. One thing that I think is a trap for some people is thinking that this is reliable artifact and enchantment removal. And whenever it costs 7 mana to do the thing you want to do, it's not flexible enough.
You know,
this is sorcery speed, 7 mana. When you need to answer the dangerous thing that your opponents are doing, it needs to be cheaper. It needs to be instant speed in order for you to react to them. This is like a value destroy. You know, when you get up to there, you're like, oh, I'll cast it and I'll just take out the 2 best things. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to give you that reactive play style that you might need to survive a game of
Command. Yeah, or play this and then play something on top.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say this is in a great deck. Again, if you have got flicker strategies and it's an enabler, it helps synergize with those parts, but I wouldn't necessarily count this as single target removal, even though it looks like it on the surface.
Yeah. All right, Jimmy, next one.
Let's go.
Archaeomancer's Map.
Oh, yeah. We were once together at this table screaming about this card. Let's scream about it again.
2 and a white for an artifact. When Archaeomancer's Map enters the battlefield, search your library for up to 2 basic planes cards. Ooh. Reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, if that player controls more lands than you, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield.
Hello. So this is got the classic white element of like, here's how you're going to catch up to your opponents land-wise. But more importantly, it's a 3-mana draw 2. It's like divination, but for 2 planes.
Baseline, you just draw 2 planes. It's not embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then the fact that this is on the battlefield and it can happen over and over and over again, and it will because you're in white, you know, this is great.
People are calling it the white cultivate. I don't think it's obviously that good. It's the closest white's gotten to cultivate.
Well, I don't know. Is it better than cultivate or Kadama's Reach?
Well,
So hang on. You 3 mana.
Yeah.
You get two cards essentially. Now with cultivate, you immediately and automatically get 1 onto the battlefield tapped. This one, you have to be lucky enough that in your first go around, someone has more lands than you and plays a land.
And then it's going to be the same-esque value as a cultivate.
And then it's exactly the same as cultivate if you can do it before it comes back around to you. If you can do it twice, then it becomes better than cultivate.
So you do have to pair it up with card draw to make sure you have enough lands to keep doing this over and over again. And then you also kind of have hope that someone else at the table is playing a ramp spell every other turn that's land-based so that you have someone to catch up to. Because inevitably, you will be at the front of the line in terms of how many lands are on the battlefield, right?
I think that if white can just play a game where it's like second when it comes to mana ramp at the table.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Good job, white. I think cultivate's only better for me right now, specifically in this current mindset, because you have all these wonderful landfall synergies in green, and green is much more suited to take use of your extra lands, like with scape shift in different ways.
Jimmy's just like, hey guys, I like cultivate better because green is better.
Yeah, sorry. That's how that answer is going to go.
But, he's not wrong either.
But here's the thing about Archaeomancer's Map. It's an artifact, so that means that you can do things with synergies with artifacts, which is what Lorehold is all about. So Osgear the Reconstructor, structure. You can sacrifice this, bring it back to the battlefield, and make two token copies of it. That means you get to draw four planes if you do that. That seems pretty darn good. Now, they are basic planes, so you do need to make sure you have a lot of planes in your deck to do that with.
But like Brago can flicker this every single turn.
Oh, and yeah.
More and more planes. Like, it just seems like this is going to be a white commander staple.
I liked how you wrote down Sun Titan, because this is a card that I want to bring back with Sun Titan for sure. And there's tons of other ways to get artifacts back into your hand, but if you flicker it with Brago, you can put Panharmonicon out too, and then just go nuts with your artifacts.
Oh my gosh, energy. Crazy.
Yeah, if you're playing three color decks too, Archaeomancer's map looks a lot worse. Sorry, just gonna put that out there. I think you're maxed out at two colors because, you know, searching up two planes. Actually, maybe you could play it in a three-color deck if you have a lot of planes. I don't know.
Yeah, but remember, they are basic planes. You should play your basics. But if you're in a three-color deck, you have to think of what other color are you interacting with,
right?
And what kind of ramp opportunities do they have, you know?
If you have green, then Archaeomancer's map, not so hot.
Yeah.
But if you're playing, like, Esper, then maybe this is something you decide to run.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Okay. All right, let's move on. Bronze Guardian, 4 and a white for an artifact creature golem. That's a star 5 with double strike and then ward 2. So this is a new evergreen mechanic that says whenever this creature becomes a target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, counter it unless that player pays the ward cost, which in this case is 2 generic mana. This also says other artifacts you control have ward 2 and that Bronze Guardian's power is equal to the number of artifacts you control. Okay. What's cool is that ward stacks. So if you have two copies of Bronze Guardian out, again, with like Ozgear, the Reconstructor, you can make token copies of it. Then every one of your creatures has ward 2 twice. So it basically makes them untargetable because that's 4 extra mana to target it.
That's cool. Do you like the ward mechanic?
I think it's good. It's not great in Commander because oftentimes people will just pay it. Mm-hmm. People do pay the 1 for Rhystic Study these days. They do pay it. And so paying the 2 to get rid of something, it is a bit of a tax, but it's not game ending.
Got it.
Hexproof is just infinitely better, right?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I don't love Hexproof, so I think that Ward being that middle ground is okay for me.
Right. Yeah, I know some people don't like the Hexproof and Shroud worlds. In that case, I'm going to try and copy this with Cogwork Assembler or Saheeli's Artistry or Sublime Epiphany and just make my artifacts literally untargetable, because who wants to pay 8 mana once you get 4?
So you like the untargetable aspect of it. I kind of like how big it gets.
Yeah.
It's like a big, dumb attacking creature. Like, I mean, that shouldn't surprise you because I have an Akiri Lineslinger deck.
Okay.
You know, the Akiri Lineslinger has a power similar, equal to the number of artifacts you have. So does this one. This has double strike, which means that it just smashes really well.
And Akiri wants to get a lot of artifacts on the battlefield too, so it's gonna get bigger. Yeah.
So this is gonna slot into there. And actually I've seen it play like with cards like Cranial Plating. Mm-hmm. That's the artifact. Unfortunately, it's in black because it has black activation cost
right.
in it. That does the same thing. And so all of these cards play really well together. You mentioned Karnstructs, you know, those play really well together too.
Oh yes, the old Karnstructs, everyone's favorite little 0/0s that just keep getting bigger.
Yeah. So I really like how big, dumb, attacky these things can be because they can just pressure your opponents a lot more than you could think.
Yeah, so I like that. You want to put it in a deck where you're really making use of that double strike, and equipment seems like a good way to do so.
Yeah, I mean, if you have double strike, you know, Swords of, you know, yep. deal double that damage, get that double trigger
double
going
trigger,
on.
Trigger, yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and double strike isn't a thing that when it starts going off, oh my goodness, hello damage. What we got next?
Next, we have Combat Calligrapher. 3 and a white for a 3/3 bird cleric with flying. Inklings can't attack you or planeswalkers you control. Whenever a player attacks one of your opponents, that attacking player creates a tapped 2/1 white and black inkling creature token with flying that's attacking that opponent.
Ah, okay. So your opponents are incentivized to attack each other. They make 2/1 inklings, and those inklings cannot attack you as long as the Combat Calligrapher is on the battlefield.
I like that it dissuades your opponents from attacking you.
Yeah.
That's always good. I'm okay with giving you some value to incentivize you to attack other people. It just feels like this is pretty fragile, you know? All it
yeah.
takes is one removal spell, and all the inklings that you've been creating throughout the early game can be swung at you.
Not just to mention, you could also steal the Combat Calligrapher so your opponent now doesn't get to be attacked by the inklings.
That's true.
The thing I don't like about this is that, you know, maybe in a super aggressive table, the Combat Calligrapher comes out and all of the players go, yes, all right, swinging out, making all these 2/1s. But let's say you have an Aristocrats deck at the table, you're giving them another token. So the Combat Calligrapher looks really good to me until someone kills it, and and then they come swinging all at you, all these 2-1s that you made. So maybe you could make it indestructible, hexproof, and it could do some more work in those areas.
It seems like a lot of hoops to jump through just to be able to, again, give someone an inkling.
Yeah. You actually put down Varchild, Betrayal of Keldor, which is interesting because it's a really good comparison to this. Varchild makes these tokens, but those tokens actually come back to you when Varchild dies. Whereas in this case, when the Combat Calligrapher dies, those tokens just chill on out there.
Yeah. Varchild, I love the templating on it because those things, like, they kind of always come back to you. Yes, your opponent can do those sacrificey things that you're talking about. You know, this either one of these cards with a skull clamp across the table from you is just like heartbreaking.
Oh my goodness.
You know what I mean? So there's
wait, actually, this card sucks now. Imagine just playing and someone has a skull clamp. You're not going to play this out of your hand. No. You're giving them free two cards every single turn.
I mean, you can generate inklings too, so maybe you have a skull clamp? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then another card that Josh and I previewed, our first preview card ever, which is Rite of the Raging Storm. Another similar effect. You're making creatures for other people, but those creatures get sacrificed at the end of combat.
I like Rite of the Raging Storm.
Yeah, you know what? Over time, I found I liked it more and more because 5-1 with Trample, that could be a lot of damage.
Yeah.
It adds up. Next up, we have the Dig Site Engineer. 2 and a white for a 3/3 Dwarf Artificer. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, you may pay 2 generic mana. If you do, create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. So these are the constructs, as you so aptly named them.
I love this card so much. I really do. Just constantly, here's the thing, a construct for 2 mana is just a great deal. Mm-hmm. I will take that any day.
Because that creature might be like a 6/6.
Yeah. And it adjusts, it scales with the game. So one construct and there's just nothing else on the board. There has to be an artifact. So it's automatically a 2 mana 2/2, but then every other artifact you play.
Wait, no, it itself is a 1/1 by itself because it is the first artifact you have.
Yes, but you had to play an artifact to trigger it too.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So you play an artifact to trigger it and then it's an artifact itself. So that's why I'm like, it's kind of a 2/2 for two.
Yeah,
but then the next artifact you play and you trigger it, then suddenly you have 2 4/4s.
Oh, 2 4/4s, that's right. Because
you played another artifact and then you did that. Like, it scales so well.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like about this is that it says whenever you cast an artifact spell, which means that you can't flicker it to have it enter the battlefield. And then that made me think of...
You're thinking of Ozgear and wanting to like bring him back from the graveyard and trigger this and stuff, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about Mentor of the Meek, which has you paying 2 mana for an extra card every single time a power 2 or less creature enters the battlefield. And that to me seems like it's actually pretty hard to trigger because 2 mana to me seems a little bit pricey. But constructs do get to be very, very big, so I see your point there.
I know what you mean. Like, I've found myself wanting to curve out a little bit more in a lot of these decks.
Yeah.
And artifacts, you know, you don't often have 2 mana to spend.
Right.
You know? But maybe this is playing in a deck where you have a lot of little things, maybe in equipment decks and stuff like that, where, I mean, just imagine you play Baubles or you play other mana rocks or you draw your Soul Ring late and usually your mana rocks are dead cards, but now they come with a huge body.
Yeah. I like that part of it. I wish you could cast a ramp spell, like a Soul Ring, and use that Soul Ring to pay for Dig Site Engineer, but it's an on-cast trigger, so you can't do that.
Sure.
But I would compare it also, you put down Retrofitter Foundry, Mirrorsmith, Karn, Sound of Urza. Like, look at the rates of those cards and ask yourself, is paying 2 mana for this better or worse? And I think actually it's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, one final thing. Dapala Pilot Exemplar.
Oh,
cares about dwarves, cares about artifacts, and the sort of do-nothing artifacts, like vehicles, when you cast them, they don't do anything, but now they do with the Dig Site Engineer. So this seems like a perfect fit in those kinds of decks.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Excavation Technique is 3 and a white for a sorcery with Demonstrate. Do we need a refresher on Demonstrate?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Yeah, so I'm going to read the card and then I'll explain Demonstrate. So destroy target non-land permanent. Its controller creates 2 treasure tokens. Hmm. So on its face, 4 mana, sorcery speed, destroy non-land permanent. You get 2 treasure tokens. That's not a very good rate. You know, we can get this similar effect for 3 mana, maybe even less. But
Demonstrate. Also, you're giving them 2 treasures.
We're giving them 2 treasures, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Demonstrate, though, means that you can have an opponent have a copy of this spell.
Oh, thank you.
But then I get an additional copy of that spell.
So you get 2 casts of this,
that's
and I
right.
get 1.
You get 1. So that means that this spell could go off 3 times, creating a much bigger impact on a 4-player game of Commander across the board.
Yeah, so 4 mana, get rid of the 3 most problematic things on the board and exchange them for 2 treasures each. That seems pretty good. You just need to make sure that the person you're demonstrating with is down to do it with you.
And I think people are down to do it with you. Like there's a lot of, there's a lot of politics going on, and when you can leverage what your opponents are doing and give them incentives, then you could get them on your side for a lot of other things.
Yeah. Not to mention sometimes you do need to, when you're playing like against a Josh or even a DJ, get rid of three combo pieces because all three of them are problematic. It's not just the Great Henge. It's that plus this and the commander. So,
but actually things like this are great equalizers in a game. I mean, if you can imagine someone is the arch enemy and you need to take them down, this is the way that you restore balance to the table is by teaming up and taking someone, Josh, down a peg.
Yeah, we'll just keep putting that in people's heads so that when we get back to Magic Fest, everyone knows who's the target first. Yeah, comparing the downsides to Swords of Plowshares, which has the person gaining life, and Path to Exile, which gives them a basic land. The two treasure tokens are very good, obviously.
Yeah, I hate giving someone a land, honestly.
Yeah, I do hate giving them two mana as well. So it's a little worse when you're trying to target their commander because the mana you're giving them is going to help them rebuild their board. But if you're just putting something in the graveyard and they can't get it back, that might be worth it. And the two extra mana, well, they're probably going to use it against you, so be careful. Also, in mono white, this is great, I think. In any time you add another color to white, especially black, this just becomes, I think, a lot worse.
Would you ever blow up your own things to ramp?
I think so. If you had maybe like, because you're copying it, right? Maybe it's like, I'm going to blow up that thing and I'm going to let you choose one thing. And then I'm also going to blow up this 1/1 token that doesn't do anything anymore. Get two treasures. Now I can play another spell this turn or even next turn I play an even bigger thing.
I think ramping, I like the idea of ramping it in next turn. Like four mana, you can take care of that problem. I'm just going to destroy two like soldiers like you mentioned and get four treasure tokens to set me up for my next turn.
I mean,
it's a silly play, but I like it.
If you remember Josh's Tago deck where he was using like Gyarapur Aether Grid and stuff and just ways to, right? If you have improvised abilities in your deck, then having those extra treasures might be really good for you. All right, next up we have Guardian Archon, 4WW for a 5/5 creature Archon with flying. As it enters the battlefield, secretly choose an opponent. And this is the activated ability, reveal the player you chose, you and target permanent you control each gain protection from the chosen player until end of turn, activate only once. So for 6 mana, you get a 5/5 flyer. It enters the battlefield and it's a secret player you choose, an opponent. And then at any point, you can reveal that player and give yourself and a permanent that you control protection from that player. So they can't target it, damage it, do anything to it otherwise.
So I really like the idea of secretly choosing a player.
Right.
I think that's a really fun mechanic. I like stalking Leonin, you know.
Oh, right.
And I think that that's a really fun play because I think it's really cool that everyone's like, I wonder what they chose.
And
you know?
Who they chose,
yeah. Who they chose, and you write it down, you stick it underneath the card. I think that's super fun. But this is just a 6-mana 5/5 flyer.
And you can only do it once, which means you better be flickering it. That's how I think about it. Ephemerate, Rune, all those sim cards, Brago. Being able to reset this all the time, like, okay, cool, I used it up, because that feels bad, right? You pay 6 mana, get this 5/5, you choose a player, and then boom, ha, got you one time, and you still have an awesome 5/5 flyer at the end of it, but you don't get to do it again, because you just have it for that turn, right?
You know what? You mentioned Brago, and that sounds really great. So basically, you reveal the player, and you have protection, so Brago can't be blocked.
Ah.
And then Brago will get in no matter what.
Wait a
and then you
second,
flicker
I
it.
Didn't even think about that. That's right, you can choose Brago for the permanent and then it can attack because it has protection. Wow, DJ, you made me sound way smarter than I actually was trying to be.
I mean, you literally, I was just trying like to reset just the saying card. It right now. You're trying to reset the card, but...
Yeah, but that's great though because it can come back and then you know who you're going to attack. You can choose the same player and at the same time, or let's say the person that's the most likely to target it, you can choose them. That's pretty neat. I like that a lot.
Here's the thing. We're a little bit happy, but that's like so corner case that we're just happy that this card can fulfill a corner case and there are Brago decks that aren't going to mess around with anything that costs six mana.
That costs 6 mana, yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, good times.
Yeah. There is one card that I do like that secretly chooses something that's a flyer and redirects it.
Uh-huh.
Emissary of Grudges.
Oh, yes, right.
That's a red. That's a
five
big,
and a red, yeah.
Yeah, big red, hasty flying creature. But it actually has you redirect a spell that's targeting something you control.
Yep.
So that means that you're kind of getting a card advantage by taking the card that's going at you and then turning around at something else. It's like a 2-for-1 built into the card.
Right.
This is just a level of protection. You might be able to blank one card or get in extra combat.
I like how you thought about Emissary of Grudges and stalking Leonin too, right? It gets rid of a card attacking you, a target creature attacking you when you reveal the chosen player. So that's nice because it actually is removal. This case just kind of blanks their spell.
I don't know. Let's take a look at monologue attacks.
Let's take a look. Deliver a monologue.
Two and a white for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent casts their second spell each turn, you create a treasure token.
Oh. Oh, okay. So this is, again, this is now with Smothering Tithe and Greed. Lots of things coming out of people's mouths in the same horrifying, like, moment.
Jimmy has the horrible, like, vision of, I don't like things spewing out of people's mouths like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Also, where did it come from? The teacher looks pretty smug and happy about it. Your unsolicited words enrich us all. Please continue, said Yold, professor of cryptorelicology. Do not take his class. Everyone wants to compare this to Smothering Tithe. Obviously, Smothering Tithe is just way better because it doesn't require your opponents to do anything but draw cards, which they're doing at the beginning of every single one of their turns, and then probably much more past that.
Yeah. So where does this sit? Like, if this generates a treasure every turn for you, Jimmy, would you think this card is playable?
The four-player table? Heck yeah. By the time it gets back to you, you get three mana.
Well, okay, if everyone generates a treasure, but what if it's just one player as it goes around the table, one treasure per turn?
So one treasure per turn, keep in mind they're not lands, so they don't stick around the battlefield. I think that's okay, but it's not great.
But one treasure per turn would kind of be a land.
Right, but you're getting rid of it, in your mind. And then you don't get that again. So,
but if you get it every turn, one treasure, it's kind of like the three mana, you have a land.
You're always, yeah, like kind of floating on top. I think if this gave you at least two treasures a turn, or even if it was like 1.5 treasures, so it was more often two than not.
Yeah, I think it needs to be two, or more often two than not.
I mean, Monologue Tax is a three mana spell. That slot is usually really crowded in decks. But if you're in a mono white deck, this is ramp. And this is something that you are desperately looking for. Even in, like, you know, in a Lorehold deck as well. I feel like this could be really good. It may also depend. If your play group is the only kind that's just like, play one thing, slam it down. Play one thing, slam it down. Then Monologue Tax, if it gets you no treasures on the turn you play it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeesh. That's never where you want to be.
But, you might not. Because if you play this on curve on three, like at four, some people will just play a four drop. You know what I mean? Or they've ramped a little bit. They just play their five drop. They're curving out. I think you have to get to a little bit higher mana cost or play against specific decks for people to actively play two spells, especially when they have the option to just be like, oh, Monologue Tax? No, I'm not going to ramp you in the early game.
Yeah, the more competitive your play group is, the lower drops they're going to have. So that's going to definitely determine whether or not by turn four or five, you're getting those one to two treasures as opposed to just like, oh, well, everyone just played one thing, so it didn't matter.
The more competitive, though, I think the more reliable you want your ramp to be.
Yeah, and again, when I say competitive, I don't think Mono White has much of a stake in that world to begin with. Yeah. So, but I do see Monologue Tax. It just feels like another type of staple for White because they don't have many things that do this in Mono White. If I was in Mono White, I'd be running every single card like this that I could just to catch up to the other players, even if they're a little clunkier.
Mangara, the new Mangara,
right?
Where you, if they play two spells, you get to draw a card. I've seen that trigger quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've played that and I've felt pretty good, but I have not drawn cards a lot of the time. Like I usually draw like one card every two times around the table. I think people avoid it.
That's a four mana spell, right?
It's a four mana spell. Drawing a card is better than creating a treasure, but I'm wondering how often people double spell, especially in the face of something like this.
Well, the next time you're in your play group, just take note because this is something that like Jorian Ruin Diver decks, they're always trying to play more than one spell a turn. But if your play group literally is just playing on curve one spell each turn, then a card like Monologue Tax is going to get a lot worse.
I think a lot of people are just going to slam this in their decks and it's not going to perform as well as they want it to. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't try it out and you shouldn't play it.
Doesn't mean that's bad either.
Yeah, I think it actually can be very good.
Right.
But I think that people are overhyping this.
True. I can feel that. All right, next up, we got the Promise of Loyalty. It's four and a white for a sorcery. Each player puts a vow counter on a creature they control and sacrifices the rest. Each of those creatures can't attack you or planeswalkers you control for as long as it has a vow counter on it. So people have been calling this Wrath of Goad because you're making sure that these creatures can't attack you. Now, Goad makes the creatures attack, but this is just sort of an interesting five mana board wipe in a way. It's like it's a very selective board wipe because you get to choose one creature you control and sack the rest, but so does everyone else. So they're going to keep their most important or best thing on the table.
I like board wipes that you can make asymmetrical. You can play against decks where they just have a bunch of tokens and there's no creature that's way above the others. And a lot of times you might be playing a deck where you're like, I only care about this one creature. I only care about my commander, you know?
Yeah, Tragic Arrogance, Slash the Ranks, two very, very good board wipes.
Tragic Arrogance is just one of my favorite board wipes and severely underplayed. Play that card.
It is. I don't know why people don't play it so much. Hey, you know what? Don't, so that I can play it more and surprise you with it. You made a good point, though. This isn't going to get rid of the worst creature or the best creature on the board ever. Opponents will always keep the thing that's the most important to them. And you made a good point, which is like, are those creatures necessarily the ones that swing at you, or are they the ones with such great utility that it's an untapper or it's got an activated ability, then that, you know, it says these creatures can't attack you, but it can definitely use abilities against you.
Yeah, I went on over to EDH Rec and looked at some of the more popular commanders out there. Golos, Moldrotha, Kenrith, Kess, Sisse, Kaikar.
Oh, yeah.
None of those care to attack you.
Yeah.
They just gain their value, like, just by being on the battlefield, by their activated abilities. So it's going to have different, this is going to have different case uses in different decks and in different playgroups.
Yeah, I'm even thinking of, like, Ailey, which is all about life gain and using,
there's so many of them,
abilities against you. And yeah, target, I would say, like, Voltron heavy decks, yeah, for sure. I still like this a lot because those big creatures, if they are going to attack, they aren't going at you. So that does seem a little bit,
I mean, a Voltron fun deck, this would be amazing.
Yeah.
Because they'd keep their Voltron commander
and they'd be like, thanks, cool,
like, just go at everyone else. And yeah, that would be amazing.
Just sort of eye you down, like, I'm coming for you. Just not right now. I made a promise.
All right. Next, we have a Scholarship Sponsor. 3 and a white for a 3/3 creature human advisor. When Scholarship Sponsor enters the battlefield, each player who controls fewer lands than the player who controls the most lands searches their library for a number of basic land cards less than or equal to the difference. Put those cards onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle.
Okay, so this is a catch-me-up spell for 4 mana. It's a creature, notably. I said this is the type of balance that isn't banned.
You're making bold claims about balance there.
Every single player gets to do this. So let's say you have one of those Josh-type players who's ramped out a billion times, has had a Thrasios activate 5 times, and they've got 6 more lands than everyone else at this point. This is a 4 mana. Obviously, you have to play it yourself, but everyone that controls fewer lands gets to get all of their basic lands pretty much on the battlefield and put them on and catch up very quickly.
I think it's great. And I think it is apt that you mentioned balance, because I feel like white should be the balancing color.
Right.
You know, they should be sort of punishing the people that, you know, go too far ahead and, like, knock them down and bring up the other people for justice, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything's equal here.
Yeah. And so I'm surprised there weren't more effects like this. And so I'm super glad to have Scholarship Sponsor.
Yeah. And I think that's where Wizards has to be sort of pushing white into, right? With your Secret Rendezvous type of cards. Just ways for everyone to feel like white isn't just the only player at the table doing it. There is some discernible benefit for other players as well.
Yeah. I think that also you can make this, it feels very symmetrical, but you can make this so it benefits you more than your opponents.
Right.
Jimmy, how many basics do you play in a 3 or 4 color deck?
Oh my gosh. In a 3 color deck, like 5 to 6 at most sometimes. And then yeah, in the 4 color deck, that number goes down to like 3, just because you, or 4, you just want one of each or something, depending.
Yeah. A lot of times I will have like 3 to 6, like you mentioned. I have like a Prismatic Vista or something like that.
Right.
And so I want to be able to fetch a basic. And so I want to have some redundancy there to fix my mana. But for the most part, like, I'm very light on basic lands. There's a good chance that people could play this and I could theoretically go searching for 4 lands and miss.
And fail to find at least a couple, yeah. You wrote down Aven Mind Sensor, which stops opponents from searching their libraries pretty much except for the top few cards.
They go 4 deep to try to get their stuff.
Yeah, to get all 5 lands you need or whatever. Opposition for agent, sure. Same idea. So there are ways.
Is this a May?
Everyone has to grab those lands and you get to grab them. I think it's up to 2 as well. So they can just go and find 0, right?
But if you control... if you control that person searching, this is not a May search.
Okay, so you can search for your library for a number of basic lands less than or equal to the difference. So less than means you could search for 0.
But if I opposition agent you, I control your search.
Oh, and then you get to get as many as you want.
So then I can go and get all... opposition agent is so busted.
Yeah, it is.
Whenever, literally, like, whenever something says search, I'm immediately like, opposition agent.
Yeah, I wish that card didn't exist sometimes. Okay, I like this too. You wrote down cards like Squandered Resources, Zurin Orb, Strip Mine, Devastating Summons. These are all cards that you can get rid of your own lands. So I could see there being a really cool synergy here where you're playing a Boros deck or whatever with Devastating Summons, or you're using a Zurin Orb to sack everything, and then you're playing a Scholarship Sponsor after you flowed the mana, catching right back up to the same lands as before, and you can do it all over again.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Well, that does it for white. Good job, white.
What do you think of white?
Giving it an A for the first time in a very long time. Archaeomancer's map, obviously nuts. I think Scholarship Sponsor and Monologue Text are both really good. And even Excavation Technique, I think, is really
yeah,
powerful.
Well, I think also that I like Karnstructs, so that's really good.
Oh, the Dig Site Engineered.
Yeah, the Dig Site Engineered. And Promise of Loyalty, if it's anything like some of the other 5-mana selective board wipes, I think it's definitely playable.
Yeah, Promise of Loyalty, sorry to bury the lead, is one of my favorite cards in this set. I love the art. I love how big that one person's hand is. And I like these kinds of board wipes.
Did we literally just like name every card? It's so funny.
Yeah, we just talked about every card. Yeah, except for a few. But that's a great sign for white. It's a very positive sign for white. Thank you.
The other cards that I didn't name too, like I have decks that I'm going to play them in.
Yeah,
which is
totally.
So funny.
Okay, let's move on to blue. Let's see how busted it is this time around. The first card we have up is Commander's Insight. X, blue, blue, blue for an instant. Target player draws X cards plus an additional card for each time they've cast a commander from the command zone this game. Okay, so X, blue, 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 instant speed, target player draws X cards. That right there is a playable card. It's Blue Sun Zenith.
It's great. We play Blue Sun Zenith. Blue Sun Zenith shuffles back into your deck, but sometimes you don't even want that.
Yeah, and people use Blue Sun Zenith as a end game because you can target any player with this. So I could target DJ, I could target Josh, I could target Megan, doesn't matter. I can target them to draw X cards with infinite mana that instantly mills them out. Now, obviously, if you have partner commanders and they've both been cast, then if you cast this for X is equal to 1, then you're going to draw 3 cards for 4 mana at instant speed.
That's
very
great.
Good.
That's great.
If X is equal to 2, you draw 4 for 5 and so on and so forth. If you have a solo commander then this acts much more like a Blue Sun Zenith. Because you've cast it once, and then is X equal to 1, then you draw 2 cards for 4 mana, which is not good. And if X is equal to 2, then you draw 3 cards for 6 mana, which is not as good as the sort of with both partners. So I think this would be great with a partner commander.
I think so too. But ultimately, this is a rate we're used to. It's at instant speed. It's not embarrassing even if you haven't cast your commander yet.
Yeah,
like people
totally.
Play. This is a playable card even without any of that commander text on there. So I think that it's very playable. People like X spells. They want to play with them. There are commanders that synergize with them that reduce the casting costs. Partner commanders, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Just a great role player. Nothing, not like super splashy, but just great.
Yeah, and even if you cast your commander once, you pay X is equal to 2. That is drawing 3 cards for 5 mana. So that it's right, like it's right around the right rate. It's not fantastic. It's not as amazing as if you have partners, but it's still, again, an instant speed card draw spell in blue. You're going to hold your mana up in these colors anyway, so good times there.
Great. I've got Curiosity Crafter over here. 3 and a blue for a 3/3 flying bird wizard. Hmm. You have no maximum hand size. Whenever a creature token you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card.
Well, color me curious. That's interesting. Creature tokens dealing damage, drawing cards. We've seen this ability quite a bit. You just need to have enough tokens to trigger this a bunch, right?
Yeah, but I'm wondering how good the body is, because would you rather have just a Coastal Piracy or a Thassa's Biden of Thassa or something like that?
Oh, right, because those cards do the same thing, and just not on the creature.
They just do it with any creature deals combat damage,
yeah.
So...
Maybe this is just redundant because it's, you know, creature token specifically does suck a little bit. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have decks that have tons of tokens.
You're right. So like you mentioned, like a Tauren deck, for example, where they do create a ton of little flying drakes. And so those are the ones that are going to trigger it anyways.
Mm-hmm. Kaikar, Spells Fury, Alila, Artful Provocateur, I think that's the name. Orvar, the All Form. These all make a bunch of tokens. And if they're attacking, especially Kaikar and Alila, because they can swing in the air, that means you are drawing a lot. So I could see this working in some decks. But like you said, maybe you're just better off playing any of the other cards that draw you for a card, regardless of the creature that's hitting them, not specifically. So yeah. This seems like maybe it's just a redundant piece in that deck.
For sure.
Okay, next up we got the Dazzling Sphinx. 3 blue blue for a 4/5 creature sphinx with flying. Whenever Dazzling Sphinx deals combat damage to a player, that player exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile an instant or sorcery card. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost, then that player puts the exile cards that weren't cast this way on the bottom of their library in a random order. So there's a very similar card to this called Chaos Wand, but in this case, it's doing the ability through combat damage. This card feels like it could be red. 3 red, red for like a Dazzling Dragon or something.
This is great. You know, you get that chaos of red, which by the way, it is like chaotic a little bit. I know what's going on there. But it's fun. You get to cast things. Like people love this effect and I love this effect. People play Atali and Thief of Sanity and love playing off your opponent's decks.
Puckle and Howdan.
Yeah. And this one, you know, it's going to hit, which is good.
Yeah, you wrote down Time Stretch and the Expropriate. Two amazing cards to hit with the Dazzling Sphinx.
But like these are, think about the commander playables. Like if you just hit a ramp spell, fine, right?
Yeah.
But there are Expropriates and Time Stretches in people's commander decks.
Yeah, I like that you also wrote Scheming Symmetry, which is an amazing way for them to tutor their best cards to the top of their library. Mm-hmm. And if it happens to be an instant or sorcery, then you're able to cast the Dazzling Sphinx, maybe give it haste, and then thwack them and steal it away from them. Even if you don't steal it away from them, you are getting it away from the top of their library, and even who cares if it's an instant or sorcery, they don't get access to that card that you schemed with them with.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
You wrote down a little bit of equipment here.
Oh, yes. The Blade of Selves. What if you swung with all of them and cast all those instant and sorceries? And then your commander is Vega the Watcher, which says whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, draw a card. So you're drawing a ton of cards and casting just a billion different spells. Okay, magical Christmas land. That's where we found ourselves.
It is magical Christmas land, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to hit some with this. It's got evasion. It comes down pretty early.
Yeah.
And you can't really whiff. Like, it's not like you're going to hit a land and go, oopsie.
Oh, right. Yeah, no matter what, you're going to hit an instant or sorcery, and chances are they're going to be pretty powerful. Just don't do it to the counterspell deck. That's not where you want to be.
Oh, you're right. That's good advice right there. Yeah. Or the white deck that is Wrath of Gods.
Maybe. Yeah, oh my gosh.
I'm thinking about all the like the cantrips and the mana ramp and the expropriates, but there are like Wrath of Gods and counter spells and stuff like that too.
At least it's a May ability.
You can miss. Okay. Inspiring Refrain. 4 blue for a sorcery. Draw 2 cards. Exile. That's it. Exile Inspiring Refrain with 3 time counters on it.
Oh.
It also has Suspend 3 for 2 and a blue. This is interesting because Suspend is weird. Let's talk this out so we know what's going on, because there's kind of 2 modes to play this card.
So should you decide to cast it normally, you're paying 4 blue, and then blammo, you cast it, you draw 3 cards, and then you exile it with 3 time counters on it.
2 cards, Jimmy.
Oh, 6 mana,
draw 2.
Okay, maybe I don't want to talk about Suspend anymore. Anyway, after you've done casting it, it goes into exile with time counters on it, and every upkeep you remove a time counter. When all have been removed, you can cast it, ignoring timing restrictions.
Absolutely. So that's not a good rate.
No.
6 mana, draw 2.
6 mana?
Okay, what about suspending this for 3 and then paying 2 and a blue?
Okay, so even when you pay 2 and a blue, you can suspend this out of your hand for 3 mana, but you could also just cast Divination and not have to wait 3 turns or 3 upkeeps or get rid of all those time counters to cast in.
That's right, but this will, after you draw 2, once you draw the Divination, it can go in exile and you can draw a second Divination for 3.
Okay.
It just takes 6 turns.
Yeah, so if you're in the commander game, and we found that these games end around turns 9 through 11, 9 or 10, even if you cast this on turn 3, that means you're only getting to cast this 3 total times maybe throughout the rest of the game. That doesn't seem great.
Well, no, not 3 times, twice, because you suspend it, you cast it on turn 3, it's turn 3.
Oh, right.
You suspend it, and then you have to wait 3 more turns. It's turn 6 by the time you draw 2.
Ugh.
And then it's turn 9 when you finally get your value that's better than a divination.
Yeah, the game should be over by that point. Yeah, you're only going to play this in a Joyra type deck that's got clock spinning, ways to get rid of this. But even then, you probably don't play it.
Yeah.
Sorry, gamers.
I really wanted to like it. I really did, because I do like Suspend. And I thought it's interesting to suspend and keep drawing cards. I thought that would be cool, but they didn't push it enough.
It is very similar to a cycle from Future Sight, which has almost identical text, but across 5 different cards, which is Arcblade, Chronomantic Escape, Cyclical Evolution, Festering March, and Reality Strobe. Our editor just went, Jimmy, why did you make me pull up 5 different cards? Just to show you that this has existed before, and you don't see any of those being played in Commander.
And you need to pull them up, because I don't know what any of those do.
It's basically the same thing, but guess what the red one does instead of drawing cards? Deals damage. Yeah. The green one gives some +3/+3, blah, blah, blah. All right, moving on to the last card, or not the last card, the last card before the mineral break. It's Muse Vortex, is what we like to call a trap card in Yu-Gi-Oh! This is X-blue for a sorcery. Exile the top X cards of your library. You may cast an instant or sorcery spell from among them with mana value X or less without paying its mana cost. Then put the exiled instant and sorcery cards that weren't cast this way into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Okay, I like what you did here. You got scientific.
Yes, I got scientific.
Or unscientific.
Super scientific. I grabbed my Spells Matter deck and was like, let's try
to
draw some cards.
Okay.
Yeah. So ultimately, my instant sorcery deck has about a third instance and sorceries.
Okay, so like 33.
Which is a huge saturation.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So if I were to draw 3 cards off of this or pay 3 into X, then I would statistically be likely to draw 1.
One, right, because is those instant and sorceries are a third of your deck.
So that's a 5 mana draw 1.
Uh-oh, not sounding good. But when you draw 2, it has to be CMC 3 or less. Ooh.
To cast it for free.
Right.
Yeah, so like, and then not all the time when I were to draw that 1, could I even cast it for free? Maybe if I was guaranteed the ability to cast it for free or ever even cheat on mana, then it might actually like regain some of that. But honestly, like in every situation that I tried, even getting really big amounts of mana, it wasn't drawing and playing out the way that I wanted to. The only way that it could actually start being okay is when I started cheating that X.
Okay. You know? So Mizzix of the Is Magnus is a great way to do that, obviously, by lowering that X spell totally. Zaxara, the exemplary, likes X spells and can pump some mana into it.
Yeah. Even when I was putting things like just imagine six into this. Uh-huh. So this is six blue, 8 mana. Okay. Again, when we're talking about a third of my deck is instants and sorceries, I'm hitting 2 spells for that. And yeah, I can cast one of them for free.
So does this need to be in a deck where you're running like 50% cards that are instants or sorceries? Because I do like that you don't have to put everything on the bottom of your library. You get to draw those cards into your hand. So that does seem like a little more exciting. This is also a sorcery, by the way. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, but just compare it to the card value that you get from commanders inside.
Right. You're guaranteed to draw the cards. You may not whiff ever because you're drawing the cards. Muse Vortex does have a chance to just whiff if you're going like 3 or less. That
sure.
feels bad.
Totally. There are some cheaty things to do. Just imagine if you were running Ancestral Vision in your deck.
Ah, so it has a spend on it, but it has a CMC of 0 so that you could actually play like X is equal to 1 and cast it like that.
Yeah. What if you have top deck manipulation? You have top, you have Scroll Rack, you have Mystical Tutor, Brainstorm, Jace, all of that stuff. So I can see how in the exact right deck, this could be fine.
I thought you were gonna say better than fine, but yeah, fine is right about there.
I think it's just fine, honestly.
You know, Epic Experiment is a card that I think all of us at some point have looked at and gone, this is it. This is the game-winning card that I could play, but it never actually pans out. And I don't know if Muse Vortex, even though you draw the cards into your hand, makes the difference.
Yeah, because Epic Experiment, like, you just play it for big and then you play all of the spells. Mm-hmm. Even though this can get you those other cards, it's a little bit of a fail-safe to get the cards that you miss on into your hands. Just hitting instants and sorceries, it just doesn't end up being good enough.
In the last game nights, I believe I was ready to cast this spell potentially, that or I bottomed it. I'm not sure, but I was having my big turn before I got murdered by Josh. And I was like, I'm so close. Maybe I'm going to cast Muse Vortex. I forget if I even kept it on top or bottomed it. That goes to show.
I love how Jimmy was like, it was my big moment and I bottomed it because it just wasn't good enough.
Even if I didn't bottom it, I could totally see a moment where, and I did this in another game nights where I did X is equal to like 8 and got like 2 things off it. And I was like, that sucks. I just paid all this mana into a spell.
But that's likely. That's likely in a third of your cards.
Right.
Like you could get 3 or 2, and that's totally expected. You have to be okay with that scenario.
Yeah, I think you have to be running an absurd amount of instants and sorceries in your deck or be able to cheat cards out like or cheat mana costs like crazy to make this really good. Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get on to the rest of blue, including some very powerful cards in black after that, we got to take a quick mid-roll break and hear from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We are covering the C21 cards, but how they work in your 99 from Strixhaven. Let's move on to the rest of blue. What we got?
Yeah, we got a few blue cards left. We've got a Perplexing Test.
Oh.
3 blue for an instant. Choose one. Return all creature tokens to their owner's hands. Return all non-creature tokens to their owner's hands.
Hey, it's like evacuation, right? So this basically bounces everything at instant speed for 5 mana? Almost everything.
Kills all the tokens.
Kills all the tokens.
It's like, hey, you guys got tokens over there? Gone.
You guys got creatures over there? Gone.
Evacuation is playable.
Oh, it's very playable. Anything that even smells like Cyclonic Rift in this format is playable. And Perplexing Test has a faint whiff of Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah, because Cyclonic Rift is one-sided. Bounce all of your stuff and not my stuff. And if you do leverage the token, non-token thing where you have a lot of tokens and they don't,
right,
then it can feel Cyclonic Rift-y.
Yeah, like Tauranne. You're going to bounce your Tauranne, but also all of their non-tokens, and you keep your tokens that are all tutus. If someone's swinging at you with 1,000 Kiki Jiki tokens, you get to say no to that. That's kind of cool.
I think people are going to riot in the comments that we compared this to Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah, like, excuse me, no thanks.
But I do think that it could be a very good card, and Evacuation is reason enough to give this a try.
Yep. I want to see Josh play this in his Orvar deck because he's making tons of token copies.
Oh, you're
things.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah, although this is creatures specifically, so that is a little different. That is a little interesting there. Okay. You'll play it if you like that bouncing stuff. Next up is Replication Technique, 4 in the blue for a sorcery with Demonstrate. And it says, create a token that's a copy of target permanent you control. Again, Demonstrate means that when you cast a spell, you can choose to copy it. And if you do, another opponent gets to do so as well. And the players can choose new targets for their copies. So this could make up to 3 copies of target permanents. So 5 mana sorcery, create a token that's a copy of target permanent you control. Seems like it might be good in like the Sakashima deck, where you can make a lot of legendary copies of things. I actually like this. Speaking of Cyclonic Rift, rift the board, play Replication Technique, and then have someone copy it because they get to copy a land and you get to copy 2 sweet things on your board because you just rifted.
By the way, copying a land is not something that we should like look down on because could this be the blue ramp spell? You know, 5 mana, ramp 2 lands.
Hey, and then someone else gets an insane copy of the permanent.
They get another Consecrated Sphinx or something like that.
Yeah. This is interesting. It's definitely tempting to always want to do this because for 5 mana, the sorcery speed, it doesn't seem amazing, but if you get to cast this twice and then you make sure that your opponent doesn't do anything too crazy with it, maybe all the Demonstrate cards are like, hey, I will give this to you to demonstrate as long as you promise to not copy that.
Or sometimes you just have something good enough that you just need extra copies of it.
Right.
Like, you know, Biovisionary.
Oh, yeah. All right. Or you're in that deck, what's it, Persistent Partitioners? You know, you can make 2 more of those, and then boom, you're off to town. You're milling everyone out.
Yeah, there's a lot of decks where creating a token and you're doubling up your tokens, you're leveraging that, you need extra copies of a creature, can just be really, really good. So yeah. I can see this seeing a lot of play.
Okay, I like it.
Sly Instigator, 3 and a blue for a 2/4 human wizard. Blue tap, until your next turn, target creature and opponent controls can't be blocked. Goad that creature.
Ah, so it must attack that next combat and it cannot attack you.
And it makes it unblockable.
Yeah, that's right. It attacks a player other than you if able.
I like Goad. Forcing like combat's Goad. Really cool.
Yeah, I do like Goad, but you made a really good point when we were talking about this in the other room, which is like, yeah, you can goad that creature, but what if you wanted to get rid of that creature by forcing it to attack? It was like some really powerful 2/2. It was like their Oracle of Moldiah, but now it's an unblockable Oracle of Moldiah. You wanted to have it chump into one of your opponent's creatures, but
I goad utility creatures all the time. I try to goad them in, and oftentimes your opponents can block them and kill them, and so this could have been a removal spell, but instead takes a little bit of a different route. I mean, best case scenario, what if you goad an Eldrazi or something like that? That could be a scenario out there, you know?
Yeah, unblockable, that makes it even scarier. Or you goad, like, I don't know, a Blightsteel Colossus or something. I don't know. For me, I'm with you here. 4 mana, it's a lot for a creature that you can't use immediately unless you have haste. I'm not a huge fan of this because
I'm not a huge fan either.
The goading is fun, but you're right. What if you just wanted that creature to die?
Yeah. I think that this is a good point of comparison is a card that is severely underplayed that I love, Bloodthirsty Blade.
Yes.
It's an artifact. It can go on anything. It costs 1 to go on it and it stays on it. So if they keep attacking with that Eldrazi, you don't have to keep activating this every single turn.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more resilient and it can get rid of those utility creatures. I just think it does the job better.
It does. And you can play it in any deck, like you said.
Yeah. 4 mana, pay 1 to sort of solve a creature. Feels kind of like an Icy Manipulator a little bit.
Locks it down. But in this case, it forces the combat. So. Yeah.
So, but like Icy Manipulator is not like a good card that we see play a lot, you know?
Now, I could, again, if your play group's like all Voltron all the time, then yeah, Sly Instigator is going to do some sly work. It looks like he's holding the Game Knights logo, but it's not.
The thing is that Voltron decks too, they're oftentimes give a Hexproof and Shroud, and then it doesn't even work.
Sly Instigator is just sitting there being like, ah, poop.
It's trying to be sly, but the other person's just like, nah, I got these boots on.
Yeah, I got these boots on. I'm flying. I'm literally protection from you, Instigator. Okay. I love this next card, though. It's called Spawning Kraken. 5 and a blue for a 6/6 creature Kraken. Whenever a Kraken, Leviathan, Octopus, or Serpent you control deals combat damage to a player, create a 9/9 blue Kraken creature token. Release the Kraken! Yeah, all right. So this goes into the decks that you know exactly which decks this goes into. It's Aisi. Because it cares about those things. I didn't even realize this first thing. Coma's Coils, everyone's favorite Coma. They are serpents.
Yes! More serpents!
Yeah, could you imagine, right? You have like an army of 3/3s. All of them swing in. This is whenever one of them deals combat damage. So each of those will trigger and make you a 9/9.
Insane.
Wow.
Coma. I mean...
Coma.
Yeah.
Chameleon.
It could go with Slim Voda because that sort of bounces all of the non-octopuses and krakens and stuff like that.
Yep, same as Whelming Wave that you wrote down
Whelming
here.
Yeah, Whelming Wave.
Serpent of Yawning Depths. So that's pretty much the suite of the Kraken, Leviathan, Octopus, Serpent deck. The Sea Monsters deck, as it were. This has gotten just more and more support over time, and Spawning Kraken just seems like one of those really fun auto-includes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Do you think, now, we mentioned a lot of sea tribal-y stuff. Does this go in any deck besides those?
Maybe if you're just being Vorthos about it and you want to play, what's that Planeswalker that loves Kraken?
Kiora.
Kiora, yeah. You're doing a Kiora type deck because she can make those 9/9s. There's also that one enchantment, the Saga one that makes it at the very end.
Kiora Battles
the
Sea Gods?
The Sea Gods, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
So I could see it in there. I could also just see, like, let's say there's some decks that I make where I'm like, all right, I don't know what to do for my big game enders. I'm just going to put in Krakens, Leviathans, Octopuses, and Serpents. And then Spawning Kraken seems pretty fun there. Because it's still a 6-mana 6/6 at the end of the day.
You've made a lot of good reasons to like this card.
Yeah, it's
I'm on board.
It's just fun and dumb.
Yeah, I like it.
Big fun and dumb. My favorite kind of magic card.
All right, we got Theoretical Duplication. 2 and a blue for an instant. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control this turn, create a token that's a copy of that creature.
Okay. So this seems like a lot of value here, obviously, because it's whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield. So if an opponent's putting out a lot of creatures, right, then you get to get all of them? Or you get copies of all of them, right?
Well, it's non-token creature enters the battlefield and opponent's control this turn.
Oh, okay, so you can do it at instant speed.
Yes.
You can copy a bunch of things if they're getting multiple things.
So you're right. If they're getting multiple things, usually if they're casting a creature, it's very difficult to get multiple things. You get one thing. But there are times when multiple creatures enter the battlefield. Things like Primal Surge, Tooth and Nail, Living Death.
Well, that is if you don't lose to the... Wait, if you Tooth and Nail their infinite combo, do you get it first?
Whenever an active player, non-active player.
Oh, no, you don't. Because they are entering the battlefield, and then you're saying, wait, enters the battlefield, and you put this in before, and you would do it on the cast of Tooth and Nail, so that when it comes in, this triggers, and then you get it. I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe you get it before.
Big Brain Jimmy is like,
I have no idea what I'm talking about. Living Death, though, that is pretty sweet.
Living Death is pretty cool. You only get copies, though.
Okay.
It's not like you steal, like you've undone all the work that they've done.
They get it as well, yeah.
You know.
But for the 3-mana as an instant, I could just still see this working just if an opponent has an amazing Enter the Battlefield creature that has a good ability on it.
Yeah, I could see you playing this just as a value. Like, oh, I like that creature. I'll take it too.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it... I think that it ends up being a little bit worse than just a normal clone, you know, because
right.
Normal clone, you can just look at the battlefield when you want to cast it and then cast it, you know, like Stunt Double is a clone with flash.
Yeah. You don't want to hold this up and not do anything with it.
Yeah. Like, so I know that Stunt Double costs one more, but you know, if you compare the two, is that one more and the flexibility of being able to cast it anytime, not having to hold it up and respond to what your opponents do, is that worth it?
Yeah, you know? Anytime you put the power in someone else's hands, you have to consider whether and how often that's going to happen. And otherwise, you're playing this in a deck like, you know, one that just wants to cast only instants and sorcery. So at least you have, I have a card draw spell instead of having to hold up Theoretical Duplication.
Yeah. And then whenever you're reactive, like you mentioned, you remove flexibility, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to wonder, well, if they're playing something really, really good, would I rather just have counterspelled it?
Ooh, that's a really good point. Because they still end up with a creature at the end of it.
Yeah.
Good point indeed. You also wrote Brudaclad, Telcor Engineer, would love this card. And I kind of agree, because if you're playing Brudaclad and someone plays an Avenger of Zendikar and you theoretical duplication it, you get a token copy of Avenger. You get all the 0/1 tokens. And then on your turn, if you play a land, those 0/1 tokens go to 1/2s. Play two lands, they go to 2/3s. And then if you switch them into Avenger of Zendikar, because that's a token that you have, then they're 5/5s with 2+1+1 counters on it. They will become 7/7s.
You've broken it, Jimmy.
I've broken it.
You've broken Commander.
So glad that I'm here. All right. Those are all the blue cards. What do you think about blue?
I actually like it less than white, which is awesome.
Yeah, it
is. Which is
awesome.
Really awesome, because I think that there are some cards that do things that other cards do better. Like, I've seen it and be like, oh, like Evacuation. You know, this is like Evacuation. Right. You know, this is like Blue Sun Zenith. You know, this is like Tempt with Reflections.
Tempt with Reflections, yeah.
So, like, this is like Bloodthirsty Blade. But it felt like all the other ones that we were comparing it to is like a tiny bit better or a tiny bit worse. And it's not really bringing the new mono white divination, yeah. Kadama's Reach, crazy stuff, right?
Sounds like Wizards might be listening, and they might be thinking about the fact that white's got to catch up, and the other players and the other colors can't be speeding ahead like they have in the past.
Shout out to Dazzling Sphinx.
Dazzling Sphinx, yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that. Okay, let's move on to black. First up, we have the author of Shadows, also known as Brandon Sanderson. He's always hanging out behind us on our set here. 4 in the black for a 3/3 Shade Warlock. When author of Shadows enters the battlefield, exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards. Choose a non-land card exiled this way. You may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast that spell. Boom! 5 mana for a creature like this? I'm in.
I'm in too.
Gonti is a very playable card, and this doesn't do the exile your graveyard things. This is sweet. 5 mana to get rid of everyone's graveyards, and then you can cast their best spell out of there?
Yeah, it has more control than Gonti, because Gonti is great, and we love it. You know, yeah. We're not going to trash talk Gonti, but it only goes 4 deep, right?
Right.
This can hit anything in any graveyard. It's in your opponent's graveyards, and neutralizes their graveyards too.
Yeah.
Remember, handle your opponent's graveyards, please.
Because if you don't, you're going to feel the bad side of it when they just completely go nuts and they're dredging something and they just got this massive thing and they're doing all crazy things with it. Author of Shadows, big sweep, gets rid of all of it at once. Yeah,
I guarantee that your opponents are using their graveyard in some way. Graveyard synergies is awesome. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, this card just seems like it's imminently playable in any black deck. You would be hard pressed to find a reason not to play it, because you need graveyard hate, and this comes with card advantage on top.
I think it's great. One thing that makes me like it, not like it a little less, but you need to be aware of, is that if you do have sort of value engines that flicker it or bring it back from the graveyard, it's hard to get that card's worth of value over and over again, because you've exiled everything you want. You know, the first time you play it, you have the pick of everyone's graveyard and it's awesome. If you sack it and bring it back or something like that, then you only have what's in the graveyard now.
Or maybe you do it early and then wait later, and then you reanimate it at the right time or flicker at the right time.
Oh, so, for sure. I mean, I still think it's great.
If you can find a way to flash this in response to someone trying to target something in their graveyard, then you win the game.
Jimmy.
You just win the game.
good achievement right there, Jimmy.
Yeah, exactly.
Tweet at Jimmy when you do it.
Will do. Maybe. I might get a lot of tweets and realize the monsters I've made.
All right, next up, we have Blight Mound. 2 and a black for an enchantment. Attacking pests you control, get +1/+0 and have Menace.
Ooh.
Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, create a 1/1 black and green pest creature token with, when this creature dies, you gain 1 life.
Okay, so this is a pest maker that gives them +1/+0 and menace Menace when they're attacking. And then anytime a non-token creature you control dies, it makes 1. So when this gets played, the only downside, I think, is that nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Something needs to die, and it needs to be a non-token creature. So that means this thing doesn't go infinite with its own pests, right? It will make a 1/1 die and make another one. So it has to be a non-token creature. But still, this seems like it's not bad.
How many pests do you want to get off of that for this to be worth its card?
A few, maybe more.
2, 3?
2, 3, yeah. Maybe 3. Maybe
I think
four.
3, I'm happy.
I think I'm happy if you're playing this in an Aristocrats deck, because you're already incidentally draining all of their life. Now, the pests would be incredible if they drained a life and gained you one when they died. But in this case, I mean, a lot of those Aristocrats decks just want creatures dying. And your own creatures are going to die because your opponents are going to target it. They do not want that Zulaport Cutthroat on the battlefield. Blight Mound's going to make you some pests. And the best part is, if you have like 5 2/1s attacking with Menace, how many of those are you realistically blocking?
Yeah, like you're...
You don't have enough creatures to do so. No way.
And a lot of times in these decks, you don't care. Like, these are disposable creatures that you can just throw away.
And when they die, great, awesome. They drain life and gain you life.
Yeah. And a lot of times in these types of decks, this little bit of chip damage that you get in ends up being really valuable because you are trying to pressure your opponent's life total by little drains here and there. So the Menace and the +1/+0 are relevant.
Yeah.
Do you need other pest cards in your deck to have this work?
No, I don't think so. Not at all. It's sort of like Bastion of Remembrance, a very similar type card that's 2 and a black. That does give you a token when there is the battlefield, but I could see Blight Mound just having a nice place in a lot of those decks. Plus, board wipe protection, you can make a lot of pests, and they all have menace, and then they're definitely coming in for that damage afterwards too, right?
Yeah, so cards like Pawn of Ulamog, Taisa Orzhov Cylon, those are cards that can play a similar role. You have to wonder whether this being an enchantment is a good thing because it's harder to interact with, or whether you'd rather be a creature because it works with your other synergies, like your Zulaport Cutthroat, like your Blood Artist and stuff like that. So there's some strengths for it being an enchantment and some weaknesses.
Yeah, the careful balance when you're making token decks is to make sure that you have enough non-token creatures that can die to even make Blight Mound start to do its thing.
Absolutely.
Okay, next up we got the Bold Plagiarist. Don't be this person, by the way, if you're a student. Plagiarism is just a bad idea. It's one of the quickest ways for you to fail a class.
A message from Jimmy.
Yeah.
Don't cheat.
Don't cheat. I mean, if you're going to cheat, at least do it in a way that people can't tell you plagiarized it, right? Don't be so bold about it like this person.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. That is pretty bold, huh?
Yeah. 3 and a black for a 2/2 with a Vampire Rogue with Flash. Whenever an opponent puts one or more counters on a creature they control, they put the same number and kind of counters on Bold Plagiarist. See, this is why plagiarism is bad, because this card is bad.
I really wanted to like this card, Jimmy, but I'm out. I really wish... Why couldn't it have just stolen it? You know what I mean? Like,
right. There's Thief of Blood that steals that sort of stuff, but this... You're right. It just kind of just... It's 4 mana to flash it out, and it's not like, ha, gotcha. It's like, ha, I made my Bold Plagiarist kind of big too.
Like, I could see this be as a white card and be like, hey, we can be friends. And
okay.
You know
yeah,
what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're both friends. Let's share the counters. No, like, you're playing, you steal the counters. You're
yeah,
in black.
It should have been Bold. What's not plagiarism? What, a Bold Stealer?
Bold Stealer.
Bold Robber. Yeah. Bold Thief, I guess. Jeez. Yeah, this doesn't make me feel good because, like, I would want, imagine this. If a Planeswalker takes up and you use this and it's already on the battlefield, it's not like it steals the Planeswalker loyalty or gives this more. Now you just put a random loyalty on your Bold Plagiarist. Yeah, it doesn't seem good to me at all.
There are situations where you can use the counters on it raw. There are situations where your opponents play crazy things, like if your friends have a Cathedral Aspect Warper deck and they've gone through a bunch of hoops to get
an indestructible counter,
lifelink counter, and all this other stuff, then I could see Bold Plagiarist being a huge blowout, but they still have their creature.
And you have to wait for someone to play Cathedral to make this good. No,
no,
thank you. 4 mana, black can do better than that.
Absolutely. Let's take a look at Cunning Rhetoric. 2 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent attacks you and or one or more planeswalkers you control, exile the top card of that player's library. You may play that card for as long as it remains exiled, and you may spend a mana as though it were mana of any color to cast it.
Okay, I like this card.
You attack me.
Yeah.
I have this out, and I...
Take the top card. It's kind of like stolen strategy type stuff. Those cards are very playable. I think this is kind of cool, but I feel like you don't, DJ.
I want to like this card. I really do. I do like that it's play, so you can play lands, just cast.
Yep.
That's good. I like that. But I've run into a card that's very, very similar to this. One of my first preview cards was Ever Watching Threshold. You're gonna have to read this on screen because it does not see a lot of play.
It's basically the same thing, but your opponents get to draw a card.
Exactly. 2 and a blue, right? You attack me with any number of creatures, I get to draw a card.
Okay.
Okay. I would actually say
that's pretty good too, but I guess it's not. You tried to make it work, it didn't do it?
It honestly didn't work. The way that played out is it did have some people not attack me.
Okay.
You know, people did not come in and attack me for 2 or 3 damage or anything like that. And so it did deter some attacks, and that's partially what this is all about, right? Like, this is in the Orzhov deck. You want to make sure, like, funnel attacks other places.
Right. I feel a butt coming on.
Yeah, but what ended up happening was that once someone decided that they did want to attack me, what they did is they attacked me with all of their creatures. They're like, okay, well, I need to attack that planeswalker. I want to attack you. I'm already giving you a card. Whether I attack you with one creature or my entire board, I might as well attack you with my entire board.
Yeah, that's not good, right? If it actually incentivizes them to hit you with more than they would have otherwise.
That's what ended up happening, is that, like, like, they're like, eh, I won't attack you with this elf. I won't attack you with this elf or whatever like that. But then when they decided that I was the highest life total and I wasn't attacked for a while, they're just like, oh, I'll attack you with everything in the mid or late game. And it's like, right. Oh my gosh, I would have taken that elf damage.
And Cunning Rhetoric doesn't give you a card for each attacking creature. It's just one instance of it.
The just one instance is... It's crazy. It drives you crazy.
I will say, though, that I think a lot of players out there do not like it when other players use their deck or play their cards. So I could see in some play groups that being a bigger deterrent. But you do raise a good point, which is, this is a two in the black, potentially do nothing enchantment if they're just going to swing at you with everything and knock you down to such a low, precarious life total that it doesn't matter that one card you get from them. I'm going to play this in my, of them. I forget what it's called. Send triplets.
You got there.
Yeah, there it is.
It's flavorful in Send Triplets, and it's flavorful in a lot of other decks that like want to play with your opponent's deck.
Yeah. All right, next up we have Essence Pulse, 3 in the black for a sorcery. You gain 2 life. Each creature gets -X/-X until end of turn, where X is the amount of life you've gained this turn. Okay, so this is kind of like a Toxic Deluge type effect, but it costs 4 mana and requires you to gain 2 life. At the very minimum, you gain 2 life.
Like
you get -2/-2. But requiring you to gain life to make this better means you have to jump through an extra hoop. And Toxic Deluge is obviously not a super accessible card. It's one that is hard to get for
maybe
a lot of players.
Mutilate, where it's equal to the number of swamps you have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so oftentimes in a mono black deck, you're playing this at 4 and you're getting -4/-4. Maybe in a gain life deck, you're reliably draining from it.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're talking about all these other black board wipes, like Mutilate, like Toxic Deluge, you know, the classic Damnation. And it seems like all of those are way more reliable than this one.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that great. Now, maybe this is in your amazing, you know, Orzhov life gain deck. This is just another version of Toxic Deluge, which isn't bad, right? Like in that case, I'm kind of down for playing it because you can -X/-X, and that kills a lot of things that are hard to get rid of otherwise. But at the same time, it seems like it's a pretty crowded slot. Damnation might just be better.
Yeah, I think that the one way that you would want to use this is almost like you do Toxic Deluge. It's selectively killing things where you can control what dies on your board versus what dies on your opponent's board. I'm thinking like a Karlov deck where your Karlov is really big. You can gain a lot of life and then sort of wipe away what your opponents are doing anyways.
Or if you're extorting a bunch, you can choose, okay, I'm only going to extort twice this turn, so I get -4/-4. Kind of cool.
Yeah, I can see that. So a little bit more selection, but man, that's some clunky selection.
It is clunky, like yeah. Toxic Deluge just works so much better, and that's obviously why it's a Commander staple. Essence Pulse, a couple more hoops to jump through, but it could be great in your deck, just depending.
All right. Incarnation Technique.
Ooh.
4 and a black for a sorcery. It's got Demonstrate. Mill 5 cards, then return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Hey, I'm kind of down with that, because if you Demonstrate against the Mizzix deck, they got no creatures returned, and you just did 2, and you milled 10 cards for 5 mana. That is actually a very good rate for mill.
Yeah, actually, you brought up the mill aspect, and that does more than we think in a lot of different decks. There are commanders that love mill. Sir Conrad.
Oh, Sir Conrad does so great with this card.
Yeah, Marin of Clan Nel'Thoth has tons of creatures to put in there. You want to get them back. You sometimes really want to get creatures in your graveyard. A Chainer.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
So the milling could be a bigger deal than we're letting on. 5 mana, return 2 creatures.
Yeah, that's good. As long as you don't have an opponent that can just make you cry because you targeted them and they milled something insane.
I think it's a fine... I mean, here's the thing. Ever After is 6 mana. Like, at 6 mana, we can get 2 creatures reliably, and sometimes we can get more. Like, Command the Dread Horde can get...
Every single one if you have enough life. Yeah.
a ton of stuff. This also can't hit your opponent's graveyards. So some of the better...
Oh, you're right.
The better, which is actually okay, because then I think it'd mess with Demonstrate a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, I get 2 and you get 2. Which one are we getting? And whose thing is stuff like that. So there are some reanimation spells out there that are a little bit cheaper, which means that they're more flexible. They can hit every graveyard, which is a little bit more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with this, and I like it. And I think that I would definitely mill 10 and get 2 creatures back.
Mill 10 for 5, not bad. Yeah. All right, next up, we got the Keen Duelist, 1 in the black for a 2/2 creature human wizard. At the beginning of your upkeep, you and target opponent each reveal the top card of your library. You each lose life equal to the mana value of the card revealed by the other player. You each put the card you revealed into your hand. So this is a 2-mana spell that at the beginning of your upkeep, you and opponent both get to draw the card off the top of your library, but depending on what the CMC or mana value is of that card, DJ's losing life based on mine, and I'm losing life based on DJ's.
This harkens back to Dark Confidant.
Bob.
People call it Roberta.
Roberta? Yeah, it does kind of. Maybe Bob's behind her. You just can't tell. It's a different version of him.
Yeah. But drawing cards is great. I really like the fact that you can sort of aim damage at your opponents. Mm-hmm. What do you think about giving your opponents the card, though?
I don't like that at all, but maybe it's fine because you're going to kill them with the giant CMC card to reveal, right? Maybe?
Okay, so you think that you want to manipulate your top deck a little bit, have higher CMC cards in your library to have the damage matter to make this card playable for you.
And I only thought about that because you mentioned it to me, and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. This is where Roberta's a little bit better.
People play Duskmantle Seer, which has a similar effect. Everyone draws cards, everyone takes damage. And stuff like that. So
This is 2 mana, though, which is pretty good. I mean, at the very least, you could choose the mono white player or the player that really needs it. Maybe you make a really good friend out of them.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot of political room to be done here. And you can choose the mono white player, that white weenie player, and they, you know, maybe don't take very much damage and you deal some damage to them.
Yeah.
I think you kind of want to be a damage dealing deck. Like, you want to pressure their life total. Rather than having this be like just a card advantage engine, just kind of like a, you know, another...
It's going to hurt the card I reveal. So.
Yeah, like another Phyrexian Arena.
Yeah. But in this case, you wrote down like Yuriko the Tiger's Shadow, which is basically doing this, one blue and a black for that card. And then Belby Corrupted Observer, because you want to get, right? You want to get that life
Belby
loss
wants,
out
wants
super
creatures
early.
That attack. They want people to lose life. They want to get on the board early, but they also produce a ton of colorless mana and a lot of times have just Eldrazi chilling in their deck.
Just chilling. Yeah. Same goes for the Rakdos Lord of Riots deck because it's trying to cheat out mana.
And it's trying to deal damage. You can't get Rakdos out unless damage has been dealt.
Oh, yeah. So this gets it out, right? As early as turn three if you have the right cards
just
out.
Just immediately
right?
gets it out and then you can have that flip over that gigantic creature that you've been casting.
Yeah,
for
pretty
cheap.
Powerful. Okay. Yeah. All right.
All right. Right here, we have Marshland Bloodcaster.
Hmm.
4 and a black for a 3/5 vampire warlock. This has got flying. And for 1 and a black and tap, rather than pay the mana cost of the next spell you cast this turn, you may pay life equal to that spell's mana value.
Okay, this is a very black effect in Magic. We've seen this now with Kirik, son of Yawgmoth. You want to pay life for stuff, and it's going to help you draw some cards.
Is Kirik a good card?
I think it's a pretty darn good card.
I think
card.
It's a pretty good card.
Pretty darn good card. So,
Yawgmoth don't make bad sons.
No, Yawgmoth does not. Anything related to that guy. Oof. Bolas' Citadel, same thing.
Life for cards is a very powerful effect now that you're mentioning all these other things.
Yeah, Marshland Bloodcaster, though, that lets you do it out of your hand. It does require you to pay for a 5-mana spell and then wait probably a turn to then pay 1 and a black to tap it and only do it once.
Huh. I'm less enthused now that you mentioned that play pattern.
Yeah, I mean, it costs 7 mana to get your first spell out for without paying its mana value. So this does make me feel like it's not as good.
So now I need to activate this like more than twice, I think.
To really get the full value.
Yeah, because the next one is 9. You know what I mean? Like
Nine total
for 2 spells, and you lost a bunch of life.
Yeah, and does the spell have to be really big for it to be good, or are you just trying to get like 1 in the black tap this pay for a 5 CMC spell or a 3 CMC spell because you're saving a little bit of mana there? So I think having it be a tap ability and pay mana for it on top really lowers its power level quite a bit for me. But it could see play, I think, in the Kirik deck, but you probably have a lot of other options that are better.
This does not work with X spells, right? Because the mana value and the mana value of X spells is the...
You unfortunately, X would be equal to 0, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so too.
That's a bummer. All right, moving on. Stinging Study, 4 and a black for an instant. You draw X cards and you lose X life, where X is the mana value of a commander you own on the battlefield or in the command zone. Okay, so... Has to be a commander you own. You can't steal someone else's commander and then cast this. But for 4 and a black, if you have Scion of Ur-Dragon out, or the Ur-Dragon, not Scion, the Ur-Dragon, blam, well, you're drawing a ton of cards, losing a ton of life.
Well, you picked one of the most, like, the biggest commanders that you can have.
Yeah.
I mean, do you play this if you have the normal Scion of the Ur-Dragon? Like, do you play it if you can draw 5 mana, draw 5?
Yeah, that seems pretty good. Pay 5 life. In black, at least, it seems like the exact normal rate for, like, Necropotence and stuff, right?
Well, I wrote down a Promise of Power, 5 mana, draw 5. You know, there's also some other text on there, but that's
not a staple, huh?
Wretched Confluence is I've paid 5 mana at instant speed to draw 3 and lose 3.
Okay.
You know, I've done that before. You mentioned Necropotence, and I think that that's what we kind of have to think about this, like a one-time Necropotence. So I think that in Necropotence, I want to like draw fresh hand. Like I want to draw 7, you know?
That's a good number, not like 25 or that one permitted that many.
Yeah. So like if I can imagine playing this for 5, instant speed, by the way.
Yep. Oh, that's actually really good. I like that much more now.
Yeah, for sure. paying it for 5 instant speed, drawing 7, and then immediately untapping, and then suddenly I have access to like a ton of stuff on my turn. That feels great.
That does feel pretty good. So Stinging Study, instant speed makes it pretty good. You're drawing, I mean, would you even play like a 5-mana draw 3 if your commander was 3?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. Like, I've played 4-mana draw 3 for the Ancient Craving and...
I mean, you've done similar things in blue. We talked about a card that's just X blue, 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 drawing for that, so...
Yeah, why wouldn't we? I mean, it just... Here's the thing. I think about drawing 4 or 5 or 6 cards, and I feel so much better.
Yeah.
That, like, drawing 3 makes me like, oh, I don't know, but... It's not that bad.
Yeah, there are a lot of cards though that will just 3-mana draw you 3 in black.
Like
so,
Wretched Confluence. Like again, like I've played that draw like 5-mana, draw 3, lose 3, and it's been exactly what I wanted in black.
Right. Yeah.
I just wish. Here's the thing. Like I have a feeling that if you are playing this for drawing 4 cards, 5 cards, 6 cards, 7 cards, that you're gonna feel great.
Yeah. I think as long 4 is probably the minimum I'd want for this.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm gonna play this at 4.
Okay,
I'm gonna play this with Erebos, my mono black Erebos deck. I'll play that.
Ooh, nice.
For sure. All right. Next we have Veinwitch Coven.
Wow.
2 and a black for a 3-3 Vampire Warlock with Menace. Whenever you gain life, you may pay black. If you do, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Okay, so every time you gain life, you can pay an extra black. The trigger will go on the stack, and you get a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. A lot of sab involved.
A lot of Raise Dead action, but yeah. Raise Dead is worth it's a black, so it's kind of worth a card.
I really like the art on it, though. It feels very fun and old schooly. This is the thing, though. You need to gain life in order to use this. I think of cards like Phyrexian Reclamation, which you're just able to use anytime you want. It costs a little bit more, but you don't need to have this gain life on top of it. So this immediately limits the kinds of decks it can go into. So yeah, keep that
black,
in mind.
There are black creatures that just bring them back to the battlefield, much less bring them back to your hand. Like Gravedigger, 4-mana, just immediately brings a creature back to your hand. That's not very playable in Commander.
And you don't have to worry about jumping through the hoop of lifelink or whatever it is. So you have to have like really repeatable lifelink in a way to get cards into your graveyard all the time to really make maximum full use of this, I feel like.
Yeah, I think you need to like trigger this like 2 or 3 times to really like get value out of it and bring back relevant cards that you want.
You know, it'd be nice if this was 3-mana, 3-3, Menace, lifelink.
That would be so good.
It can attack and get the life. And
it wouldn't
then
even
you can
be amazing. Like, it would just be like, it'd be cool and synergistic in its own right.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimmy, go design cards. No, don't leave.
Mark, I'm right here.
Don't leave.
Hey. No, don't hire me. I would do some really dumb stuff. Yeah.
Jimmy's like Commander Lightning Bolt.
Commander that's Lightning Bolt. That's the name of it. Yep, that's right. Cast it as many times as you want. Every time you cast it, costs less mana. Wow.
What do you think of black?
I thought black was just okay. Nothing in here made me go, wow, cool. Except for maybe Author of Shadows. I think a 5-mana, just you can play it in any black deck and be very okay with it, is great. The rest of these are just kind of middling, I suppose.
I think it felt like blue a little bit, like where we're talking about a board wipe and comparing it to other black board wipes. We're talking about an Aristocrat's piece that, you know, we compare to other Aristocrat's pieces.
Yeah.
It just feels slightly different. And so I don't know if they brought a bunch of new stuff. I think that this Author of Shadows definitely like felt newer, you know?
Yeah. But I do like the space that they're in, which is just like, we're going to focus more on the life gain aspect because of Witherbloom or whatever. We're going to focus more on the copying part because of Silverquill or whatever. And that means that they can be useful in the right hands, but they don't do the thing that Opposition Agent did, which is just like, well, you kind of have to have one in every deck now, or like, you know, what's the goblin? Dockside Extortionist, right? They're not so powerful and so absurd. And white, so far, I think, has just gotten the best cards, which is great because we're moving on to our most powerful and most favorite new mono-colored card. So the most powerful new mono-colored card. We both agreed on this one. It's a pretty easy one to say. It's the one that we freaked out about the first time we saw it, and we freaked out about it again when we saw it again. We both wrote Archaeomancer's Map.
I mean, it just is. Now, if it wasn't for white, if white was a good color, would this be making waves?
Probably not. But here's
which is
the thing.
So interesting. We're calling this out as the most powerful card, but then also we're like, well, it's in the context of white.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. No other colors can put lands out like this now, right? Black can't really do it. Blue can kind of do it with some cards. Red definitely can't do it. So this actually puts White's ramp ability with the cards that we've gotten recently actually like really, really far up there and better than other colors in some ways.
It's moving up there. I love this. I love the fact that it's not four mana. I really like that it's comparable to other things that green can do. I'm done gushing. I am smitten.
Yeah, I'm smitten too. I'm smitten for that kitten. Okay, let's talk about our favorite new monocolored card. I'll go first. I really like Promise of Loyalty. I know it's not the perfect card, but I like, again, I love these kinds of board wipes that let everyone keep one thing. It sometimes adds a lot of interesting dynamic to the table. And, you know, it's one of those board wipes where someone's going to go, well, at least this didn't completely reset the board and we have to wait and take an extra 10 hours to play this game. Maybe you did it in a way that helps it get a little faster and your opponents got to keep their favorite cards. And I'm sure one player is going to groan because you're like, you didn't get rid of the thing that actually caused us the most trouble. But I like it. And the art's really cool.
Do you know what? I like the fact that you're like, I like the way that it plays. You know, when we call it the most powerful card, like, yes, we want a powerful card that goes in a lot of decks, but you're like, I like the play pattern of this. I like the ability to have a board wipe to make sure the game keeps going, but not grind everything to a halt.
Right.
People still get to do their thing. I get to do my thing. That's a really fun way to play Commander.
That's why you'll never see me playing a card that says destroy all non-land permanents. Just get that out of my existence. I don't want to see that card ever played against me or play it myself.
All right, my favorite card of this set so far is Author of Shadows.
Oh, nice. That'll be my close second for me too.
Here's why I like it. I like that it feels like you're eating your fruits and vegetables because it gets rid of your opponent's graveyards. Because you need
what
to
a nice
that.
Way to put it.
Like you need to have that in your decks. You really do.
Right.
And so I have that effect. I feel like I'm doing something that's good for my deck, that makes my deck better rounded. Mm-hmm. But then also, it has the fun part of like tapping into what your opponents are doing, stealing their spell. And it could be anything, you know, their spell could even be a boat. Like it's so fun to just take whatever they're doing, to take the best thing out there, to say like, Hey Jimmy, what you got in your graveyard over there?
Oh bro, come on. Don't tell me you're good. No. Yay, I'll never recur it.
So
I mean, not
great.
To mention too, it doesn't even get rid of your own graveyard. So if you're playing a graveyard strategy, it's not like, oh darn, I need a graveyard hate. And this is the only thing I had. If you're not playing Bajuka Bog, you should be an Author of Shadows. If you're not playing it and you need some graveyard hate, this is a great staple, I think, for a lot of those decks. All right, to the listeners, let us know what your favorite cards are from this list of mono white, blue, and black. Let me know if you guys and all and y'all out there have some commander decks that you're putting them in that we didn't mention today, some sort of secret synergies that we didn't think about. And tell us, of course, if we're wrong about the cards that we're down on, too. We need to know. I need to know. Make sure you head over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone as well to pick up any of the cards we mentioned today or any of the awesome Strixhaven cards or those incredible mystical archives. Oh my goodness. I don't know how I'm going to collect them because there are so many and I want the English versions. I want that Japanese variants. I want the foil versions.
I want the foil versions and they're so hard to get.
Everything's hard to get, but you know what? Maybe you can crack them open in the collector's booster. I got a couple coming my way as well. I'm really excited.
Ooh.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, maybe I'll open them on stream or something. And of course, Ultra Pro, a big sponsor of the show. They give us all the playmats and all these incredible pieces of art. You can get the mystical archive art on the playmats.
That's
some of the best, some of the best art I think Magic's seen in quite a long time. So really, really awesome there. I love that.
Okay. We're not going to do an end step.
Nope. Too much Magic content, and we don't have enough stuff to talk about because we literally have just been talking about Magic.
I have some good stuff saved up for our next episode.
Yeah, I think all of us have some good stuff, too.
I put it out there. I was like, I got an end step, guys, and they're like, no. Moving full ahead of Magic, straight ahead.
How dare you, DJ? We can't do that on this show. All right, cleanup step. Our editing, graphics, and logistics team here at the Command Zone is Manton Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Alfred Desaka, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, and Gaurav Galati. And big thanks, as always, to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations that often live behind us on set, but definitely do start our show at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. You can find him on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. Yeah!
Thank you so much for joining us.
And we'll
bye-bye,
see you
everyone.
Next time. Bye-bye. Woo!
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.